last Saturday was the CLGB's 50th anniversary, and I was asked to give a talk on the CLGB and endocrine therapy. Larry Norton gave one on CLGB and chemotherapy. I started my talk by saying that CLGB and endocrine therapy was an oxymoron, and described, particularly for those who are younger, the intense debate that took place in 1988 when we recognized that, in fact, the first presentations of the overview, not the first publication, but the first presentations, which were in 1984, 1985, had made a big mistake. One of the things that was exciting about the overview initially was that it showed both, the Europeans, of course, were excited, that tamoxifen reduced mortality, which I certainly hadn't anticipated. I just didn't think that enough cells would be affected and that it was cytostatic. But it also suggested that chemotherapy had a big impact on mortality, about the same degree impact on mortality of postmenopausal women. But when the dust settled, and before the first publication came out in the New England Journal in 89, it turned out that there were some errors in the actual calculations. Maybe this little fact of history has been lost along the way, and in fact that the effects of chemotherapy in postmenopausal women were not nearly as large. In fact, they were not statistically significant. And that was a bit of an embarrassment, and it forced us to rethink the issue, and we came back, and the debate surrounded the fact that we needed to consider an amendment to our protocol at that time, which was the CAF dose study, in which we added tamoxifen to the regimen for all postmenopausal ER-positive women. And a lot of the medical oncologists were not willing to accept that. It just didn't make sense that this wimpy therapy could, in fact, have as great an impact as chemotherapy. It just was not the way we were used to thinking. I think it's taken a long time for this to sink in. Now, I think that the outgrowth of this, of course, is that Herceptin is a growth factor regulator, the same way endocrine therapy is. Herceptin is also a bit of wimpy therapy. I mean, it has almost no toxicity. It was amazing at the beginning. And I really didn't think it would have such a big impact, even though Larry Norton and I were the first two investigators to do a phase two study on it and see these responses, which were really quite dramatic. So I think that it has required an acceptance, first, of the fact that there really are two very, very powerful therapies, that is the cytotoxics in one group and endocrine therapy and Herceptin in another group, that both of these, given in the right population, in fact, work very, very well. And with that acceptance, then we're willing to accept that there are specific markers that pick out the patients that will benefit these two therapies. In general, prognostic factors and predictive factors only become valuable as you have therapies to go with them. You can't separate these two things. And you can see in the history of medicine that, for example, we really didn't give up the mastectomy until we had lumpectomy and radiation, a therapy that was really just as radical. But until there was an alternative, we couldn't give up the radical mastectomy. You can find many other examples where changes take place only as there is really a new therapy and the underlying science may go ahead of this area of the therapeutics for a while, and our understandings may go ahead, but we don't really accept it. We don't really change until we have therapeutic alternatives to employ. And I think that's what's driving this process right now.